Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Cy White.
Hello.
And joined by Ewan Paterson.
Hello.
A very confused Ewan Paterson.
Got my bloods up, man.
He's got his bloods up. Because we're going to talk all things Spider-Man 2 spoilers. So if everything's on the table, you've been warned. Hopefully you finished the game as you're listening to us. But we don't care if you're not. We're going to dive into all sorts of different things. We've got little umbrella topics to hit. Obviously, there's talking points like the ending, the story, Venom, the side content, etc. However, one thing that we started discussing that I was like, no, we need to hit record and get this down, is the discussion around the opening of the game. Already being passed around as one of the best openings to a game in quite some time, in years. It's the big Sandman fight from the opening of the game where you're swapping between Spidey and Miles. I didn't think this was anything special, and Sai, you started to say something very incendiary.
Yeah, I think it's probably the worst part of the entire franchise to this point. I loved some of the spectacle stuff in this game and also the other ones, where it's like you're watching it and you're like, this is the best Spider-Man movie I've ever watched. It's mm-hmm. so cool, and occasionally I get to press some buttons, and I'm not mad about the QuickTime event part. But this opening to this game, I just couldn't wait for the game to actually start. I was just like, just get on with it. I want to get to the game part of the game. Like, it just felt clunky. And spectacle-wise, it was only okay for me. But I was mostly just like, cool, where's the game in this?
Can I do you want to fight some identical enemies?
In a video game, do you not take control of a character and, like, play through it? Is that not the
game?
Yeah,
but how much do you like QuickTime events and on-rails stuff and the
most
standard
thing they could have done? There's barely any QTEs in that opening, honestly. I think you're both spoiled in terms of, like, where we are and, like, how the technical... Like, that is such a great technical showcase for, like, this generation of hardware and where it's what it's capable of. And, like, Sandman for me, I'm slightly biased, I have to say, because, like, Sandman is my favourite Spider-Man villain. He's one of my favourite, like, Marvel characters in general. But, like, the whole... Like, I think that's such a great, like, the layering of tension and excitement. It reminds me, like, I think it's just as good as the intro to the first game. And yeah. We can't talk about series low points, that being among them, when Miles Morales had so much, like, rote story content in it too. That, to me, is wild.
There's an interesting thing to talk about with, like, the idea of filler in this game. Because, I mean, it's a whole other thing, but, like, the minigame, some of the side content, and, like, the fact that a lot of the conversation around Miles Morales was, like, oh, they trimmed it all down, they focused it from the 2018 one, and it's way more straightforward. You're not having to worry about putting genetic strands together or whatever the hell we were doing as Peter in the 2018 one. And then all that stuff is back in this one, and there's a different minigame every 5 minutes, and it's like, okay, do 10 of these over and over again. And I quite like that focus that was there for Miles Morales. And I think, like, I mean, specifically for the intro, though, for me, it was like the enemies I was fighting all just felt like I was just fighting mushmen. It felt like I was fighting the dudes from the end of the 2016 Suicide
Squad. You weren't impressed by, like, going in and out of the buildings, like, swinging around, seeing the amount of, like, particle effects going on, getting pinged halfway across the map, going back forward, combining the two Spider-Men's abilities, and doing all... I'm genuinely perplexed that hasn't left an impression, and in fact the only impression it's left is negative. That is shocking to me.
That for me, like, didn't stand out as a showcase of SSD tech or what they can do. Like, it was a standard big boss fight with lots of you will stand exactly here and do exactly this.
I don't know if I go that far. Like, I feel like it was very clearly like, look, this is the PS5 one, I got that. I was like, yeah, okay, you couldn't have done this in the previous games, fair enough. Like, on a technical level it was impressive, but from a jumping in at the gameplay point, that's not what I wanted out of the game. Like, I didn't want like a here's a giant boss fight, you fly around a little bit and press a few buttons to beat him. It was just kind of like, it was a little underwhelming for me.
I think there was another thing as well. I mentioned this to you, and I am wrong about this, but I think there's an interesting talking point around,
I'm sample
like
that for every single.
Oh yeah, you just take. I'll put it on a t-shirt. But the thing is, like, there's a feeling around the original Spidey game that like it was like a traditional Spidey story. It was just a Peter Parker story, and it was just like quite. I'm gonna use the word grounded because it felt quite grounded. You can argue there's all the Mr. Negative stuff. And I know me and you have already talked about this, but I thought that the original of these games was quite a straightforward, solid, relatable, cool, nice little Spidey story. And then it's like over time, and especially the beginning of this one, which kind of compounded it, it's like, here's this giant kaiju fight in New York. And for me, some of the worst parts of this game are when the scale is humongous, like the symbiote invasion, but it doesn't feel like it. No one's really reacting to it.
It's a Marvel video game, Scott. This is completely astounding to me. Like, there's no, like, the whole, there's a different thematic bent to the game here, where the original is more tech focused and you have that, but it's still complete nonsense if we're talking about it being grounded or whatever. The whole human element to the story is still there in this one.
Yeah, and it is,
like,
but...
like, it's like, oh, like, I don't know, like, if you can't get behind squishy, goopy ridiculousness in your Spider-Man game, I'm just a little bit confused about what you want out of Spider-Man, because he has never been grounded.
Things that are believable, like, if you're going to do a big kaiju fight...
What? It's Spider-Man! It's Spider-Man.
That's not a catch-all, though. Like, it doesn't make... Like, in this one, there's a big old kaiju fight, and then at the end, there's the whole alien invasion. There's no response from New York whatsoever, or the Avengers, or anyone. Like, well, that didn't work.
That's not the... That's a different issue altogether. Like, the fact that there isn't the issue. The issue really is, like, how they don't make the world feel as responsive to those things as it maybe should be. But I don't think there's any argument you can put forward here where it's like the Spider-Man game is weak because it leans into wild comic book stuff, because this has always been a part of the character. Especially, you know, if you lean back into the 80s and then, like, you grew up with the 90s cartoon, man. This is just as wild as the 90s cartoon and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely playing in that ballpark. It was just like, and there's an overall feeling of escalation here that doesn't pay off or feel overall believable. And I am citing that bigger sense of stuff, like the kaiju stuff, like the symbiote invasion or whatever. Like, and then that being the opening, it was just like, oh man, this is like full on, what the hell are we doing? This is all over the place. And then in terms of the gameplay, it just felt very standard and the stuff that Sai said. But that was my thought. I mean, that was the thing. I didn't think it started off on a good footing. Me and Sai messaged a little bit about some of the side content, like some of the stuff with Yuri, the parry system, some of the boss fights and the boss design. And that particular fight against Yuri is kind of held up at the minute as being one of the hardest ones in the game.
Yeah.
And sure. Like, I guess just general, I mean, we should definitely give us some positives as well, because we've definitely got in on it immediately. And you gave it 4.5 stars in the review. So there's a lot of really good positive stuff to talk about as well. But thoughts on, I guess, the combat stuff, like the bringing the parry move in, and then that works with certain enemy types.
You know the phrase, if it ain't broke, don't fix it? They were very close to breaking.
Positive side.
Like, I mean, no, but seriously, it's so good that everything comes across wholesale. But you mentioned the parry mechanic. I can't be positive about it. Like, what a mistake. What a pointless inclusion. Because the gameplay is otherwise perfect and has been since the beginning. And the dodge is what makes it feel fun. Why do they have to add a parry in? And as everyone's complained, like the actual visual prompt is basically the same.
Yeah.
And then they add the crunch attacks in as well, where you have to dodge instead of parry, and that's practically the same as well. It was just too much for me, which is a shame, because otherwise the game plays practically flawlessly. When you talk about, like, it made me think of Horizon Forbidden West and how that game introduced, I can't remember what it's called, but she's got like the paraglider sort of thing.
Oh yeah, the
and I remember playing that and thinking, like, if I went back to Zero Dawn now, I would just jump off a cliff and die, because I forget that that's not a mechanic. Same thing with Spider-Man. Without the web wings now, I just can't imagine it without the web wings. That's how good they are. And the way you can swoop around the city and go, you know, there's like the spheres, and it's like, go through these and you get like a big boost, and it feels good every time. Mm-hmm. Like, the traversal's great and the combat's great, with exception to the parry. that parry sucks. We need to get over parry mechanics.
Yeah, the traversal is by far the biggest. Like, you can, that's a new gold standard. Like that, yeah. Especially on PS5, especially with the new technology and everything. But Ewan thought, I was going to ask that, what we were originally going to open the podcast on was everyone's initial thoughts. But I just thought it was funny to just keep going with the conversation that we started on before hitting the record button. But Ewan, general thoughts, you can go into whatever direction you want. With the minute we're on combat, but
I mean, I have to agree that the parry mechanic felt a little bit clumsy for me at times. But that's one of those things, like, I don't mind occasionally getting my ass kicked as Spider-Man. Like, he's Spider-Man, like, he always looks cool when he's a little bit beaten up. So right. It didn't cause me enough of a frustration for it to be, like, an overwhelming negative. I do think they should have had, like, a better visual to indicate that you need to parry at this point in time. My issue with it is that I think they gave you too much of a parry window. I think because the parryable attacks, they start so slowly and build up. Sometimes you'll end up parrying too soon, and I feel like that slows the momentum down ever so slightly. As far as I'm concerned, I think it's really well integrated in the boss fights, which for me are like the big highlight of this game. I love what they got away with and achieved with the bosses here, in terms of particularly when you get into that final act and you have all the stuff with, you know, Kraven and, you know, Peter and Venom, obviously, and I enjoy the lizard fight too. But yeah, I mean, overall, I do think this is like, I want to say it's a step up from the original game, and I did say that in the review. I think the thing is that, like, the story for me is phenomenal. The gameplay is fantastic. I enjoy so much. The thing that I find frustrating about the title is the lack of open world improvements. I feel like, given it's been 5 years since the original Marvel's Spider-Man, which, if you go back and play that now, which I have been, just as for a bit of fun, I went back and looked at it remastered again. I played through the Rikers Island set piece, which is still just an absolutely incredible, like, one of the series high points to me. There is so much more stuff to do in the open world in the first Marvel Spider-Man that I find the lack of interest paid in that direction for the sequel somewhat baffling. It's one of those where I couldn't say that, like, oh, this is such a negative that I think it's actually, like, worse than the first game, because I don't think that. I think that this is still really, really good. I just wish that Insomniac had, you know, clearly so much attention and effort was spent on making this, like, a really cool, like, tribute to the symbiotes, and we're going to make this story super great and compelling and try and match, if not better, what we did in the first game. But I think that somewhere along the way, they forgot that an open-world Spider-Man game needs to feel like it needs to have more stuff in it, and, like, the side content overall I found to be quite repetitive. The Crimes and Progress didn't get enough of a new lick of paint for me. They added in, you know, you can occasionally bring people back to the hospital, but that's still nowhere near as much stuff we got in Spider-Man 2 back in 2004, where you could, you know, rescue people from, like, burning buildings, you could rescue people from, like, yachts that were capsizing in the Hudson or whatever. It just, to me, it felt like they made a great Spider-Man story and just haven't populated the open world with enough. And there's, like, weird missing features as well. Like, the fact they haven't brought back a bunch of costumes is somewhat bizarre. There's stuff as well, like, you can't listen back to podcasts. I don't know, there's some weird stuff here that is slightly frustrating. Again, I don't want to be too negative, because I absolutely adored the game. It's probably my game of the year so far. I haven't played Alan Wake 2 yet, so that's the main reason why. But,
shout out to Alan Wake 2.
I loved it. I think this incarnation of Spider-Man just really gels with me. Like, I mentioned it briefly in the review that I'm, like, the same age as Peter Parker was in the 2018 game, and then I am the same age as him now in the sequel, or a little bit older, actually. And it's just weird how much of my personal life is aligned with their journey in these games. So there are points of the game that really landed well for me. But yeah, I think it's not quite a full home run. There's so much here that I love, and I love, like, the storytelling is brilliant, but I wish they paid more attention to the open world and also thought about not giving Miles that stupid costume at the end, because it's truly, truly abominable. He walked on into that scene with that on, and I was like, mate, there's an entire symbiote invasion going on right now.
Yeah, where did you get this?
Secondly, you're calling it a Miles Morales original. You already designed your own design in the previous game. And it just kind of really, like, baffled me. It just felt like really terrible Adidas, like, product placement. Like, oh, check out these Miles Morales shoes we got. So that's the only like, couple things. I think the open world, I think that's the biggest negative that this has going for it at the current moment in time.
Ty, what do you think about the open world stuff? You did a little smile when we and you mentioned boss battle stuff too, but we can talk about.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't want to feel like we're sitting here ragging on it too hard, but
I agree with
essentially all of the points that you just made. Really, mm-hmm. like the conversation early up to this point in the year was, you know, about what's going to be game of the year. It's a crazy year. There's so much competition, and everyone kept going, well, just wait until Spider-Man 2 because it's going to be up there. And I don't think it's quite close to the conversation at the top of it, unfortunately. I think they've just missed the mark on it. But overall, it's really, really good. I just don't think it's going to be the number one game of the year because of issues that we've talked about. As you say, the open world, they added some of Brooklyn and some of Queens. I actually thought it was going to be bigger, but whether it's bigger or not, I just don't feel like you use it in any meaningful way. There's nothing going on. You go to Brooklyn Visions a few times for a few side missions as Miles Morales. Peter lives in Astoria, I think, and there's Coney Island, which is the most remarkable part of that side of the map. But the rest of it is just like, yeah, quite unremarkable, and they didn't do anything interesting with it, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And the other negative, I will do some positives, I promise. The other negative is the boss fight. Yeah, the lizard fight in particular. It's awesome, like visually and stuff like that. It was really cool. I really like the Venom versus Kraven stuff. It was just mental. It was just so good. Every boss fight goes on way too long, though. Everything has got like four phases.
The scream fight.
Come on. Yeah, that one. That one had like four phases, and they were all basically identical. And I was like, It just kind of like, yeah, I've done this now. It's just unfortunate because, yeah, there was a bunch of... The scream thing in particular, just thought, what a wonderful surprise. I was like, that's so cool. And there were so many moments of, that's so cool, and a nice little nod to the fans. And I think overall, the story of this is at least on par, if not better, than the first game. I thought the writing was really strong. I like the characterization of basically everyone and their evolutions in the time since, and sort of the interpersonal relationships where you can see where it's going basically from the beginning with sort of like the three-way friendship issue with Harry now being up and about. But there were so many surprises and cool twists along the way. I thought, yeah, overall as a story, this might be better than the first game. It's just a shame that it's let down by a bunch of small, admittedly we've gone on about them, but small gameplay things overall.
Mm-hmm. My thing, just to, I'll be Mr. Negative. I'm Martin Lee. We'll get the biggest negative out of the way.
He became Mr. Positive, mate.
Maybe I'll phase shift eventually. But for me, it was just like, it's nowhere near Game of the Year. Like the caliber of like Final Fantasy 16, Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, like it's nothing near that. To me, the biggest discussion with this game is how economical it is as a sequel, which is one of the biggest positives, and it can be. But it's like, there's a lot of reused animation, reused combat, like fighting. The general feel of it is very, very similar, which is fine. But the stuff that they added, like the suit powers, there's a lot of crossover between Miles and Peter. Like a lot of the stuff that you're doing, it's a group launcher, or it's, you know, bring them together and phase them all out at once or whatever. I don't like to me the powers didn't differentiate it that much. I have quite a bigger issue with the marketing and like how much they obviously sold it on Peter and Miles versus Venom. It's in all the key art, it's the big statue that never happens in the game. Like, to me, Venom is massively underused. Like, he's only really in it for about half an hour or something at the very, very end. So
half
like
an
I
hour?
Really thought that
I
was
a huge issue with that.
He's barely in it. Like, I mean,
no,
that bit when you play as him is great.
Third of the game.
No, well, literally for me, when Venom showed up, it was the 14-hour mark, and I finished it at 16. So for me, it was very, very little. And so, like, I like the bit when you get to play as him, but like, to me, he's barely part of the story. And like, it was one of those things where I was looking forward to that. I thought they would do that big finale of Peter and Miles taking him down, but they don't. For me, there's a bit of a marketing issue there that it doesn't pay off the big hook of Peter, Miles, and Venom as this trio throughout. I couldn't wait for that to kick off. And I agree with you, Sally. The characterization is bang on. Like, I love this version of Peter and Miles. And this version of Harry is really fascinating too. But to me, once the suit shows up and Peter becomes evil Peter, almost, it's literally overnight. Like, it's immediate. It feels really hokey on the nose and forced. And then for me, the rest of it was just such a rush.
But that's
and
what
it feels...
always, that's always been the case. When the 90s cartoon introduced that element of the character where he gets the symbiote suit, he does become insta asshole overnight. Like, that is the entire thing. So
yeah, I mean, it's, to me, whatever, like there's a tone, there's a sense of pace, like to the overall presentation of this
version
of the character.
But if you're complaining about Venom not being in as soon as you would like, and now you're arguing that there should have been like a slower development of pace to Peter's like decline, like it's kind of like I agree, there's like a kind of like a difficult situation here where you can't, like, I like the slow build up here because I thought it was kind of like the layering the mystery of who could potentially be Venom.
Yeah. Yes.
Because, like, you know, you had the whole tease where you think that maybe Peter, the symbiote suit evolving, is just eventually going to evolve into Venom. There's even that great bit in the opening where the symbiote comes through Norman's arm almost, and, like, different characters are wearing black and stuff like that. So I'm fine with the amount of Venom that we get in the end, especially when we get so much symbiote stuff towards the end, and it pulls from Donny Cates and Ryan Stegman's run on the Venom comic book, which again we have to talk about because those guys don't appear to have been compensated for the sheer amount of stuff that's been put into the game, which is just absolute shocking, typical, stupid superhero medium stuff where people who contribute the most get the least. I'm disappointed with Insomniac for that because we've seen it before where companies have gone out of their way to offer creative consultancy work to these guys so they're at least getting some income from their work being used, but seemingly that did not happen here.
Like I said, a big core issue with the marketing, the payoff, the Venom stuff, to me, massively underused. Like, and I mean Tony Todd's Venom, like the proper Venom, big ass Venom. Like, that's what I want. And like, and the payoff to that stuff, all of the stuff with Peter being super evil, Harry being immediately ready to become Venom, all that stuff felt super, super rushed. Which, like I said, is my overall point. I feel like there's a economic reality to the fact that they've turned over so many games. It's not Insomniac have turned over so many games in the last 5 years, and it's a Herculean task. Like, they are phenomenal as a dev, but at the same time, you've had 3 Spider-Man games, Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, and the remaster of the 2018 one, and I think you can tell, like, towards the end of this game, it feels like quite a lot of stuff was cut in regards to the Peter versus Venom stuff across the city. Like, that scene starts where they go to chase each other, and then we cut and we play as Miles instead. I wouldn't be surprised if it comes out in the next couple of years that more stuff was cut from the back third of the game, because to me, there's a huge pacing issue for the first 2/3 versus how the third feels, and all the stuff with the symbiote invasion and everything, and how big that feels, because it consumes New York, but it doesn't really feel like New York itself is responding to it, whether that be a police presence thing or the Avengers or whatever the hell. Like, to me, there's an issue there with just the way it was marketed, the reality of how it came together, and to me, what they assumedly took out to still get it over the finish line and charge us £70 for it, and etc. So for me, there's an issue with that. The stealth as well, I think, is completely broken and pointless by the time you get any of the powers. Like, the web zip stuff is cool. The fact that you can send lines anywhere, that's awesome. But you don't need to. Like, once you have the ability to grab 20 dudes at once, you can just do that and steamroll everything, which is potentially awesome because it makes you feel like the power of the suit. And I thought they were doing a really cool metatextual thing with that when you get the abilities as Peter. And I was like, oh man, I feel super powered. I'm actually going to go and do all these hunter missions and all these hunter blinds and everything that I'm going to mop them all up right now, tonight, and in the nighttime portion of the story, because I feel so overpowered. How much of a great line to walk is that I feel empowered as a player, and Peter knows he's giving into this power? But to me, they don't really do anything with that, and they don't pay it off. And like I said, it just kind of felt rushed. But those are my core things with it. And then it's the repetitiveness of the open world, which again, I would say is a reality of the economic reality of the game, that they were just like, let's design 5 things, and then times by 10, that's your open world. And then, like Sai said, the new portions of the open world itself, they're so underused, which I can only assume a level of get this game over the finish line kind of thing, to get it turned around. So, yeah, I mean, that's my beef with it. It's what I thought it was going in, and the version of a Spider-Man 2 story that they advertised, and then the reality of how it comes together in that back third. And then certain things like the stealth stuff and the repetitiveness of the open world. Traversal stuff, though, unbelievable. Like, that has to be the new standard for wingsuits in games. Like, Crackdown 2 can eat it going forward because it's not remotely close to that again.
Are you pro web wing now?
I don't know. No, not really. I like the web wings. I like wingsuits. Wingsuits are fine, but I'm Spider-Man swings. I don't need him to fly. What the air current stuff in this is borderline. I don't need this because that just makes it into Superman, and I can fly over the whole water.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's my negative with the traversal here is that I think the sense of speed momentum is fantastic. Like, there's literally a point where I was playing this game and I felt my ass ascending into my chest. Like, it's like the, like, you do feel kind of like when you're going at those top speeds. Mm-hmm. My issue with it is that I think it's emblematic of the fact that they haven't put enough stuff in the open world to justify you slowing down to take a minute to look at stuff.
Yeah.
The highlight with the original Marvel Spider-Man for me was how organically they integrated the kind of lore and world building. Like, the backpacks were so addictive for a reason. I enjoyed that. The landmarks gave you incentive to check out how Insomniac's version of New York was arranged. And there just isn't that here this time around. You can go and find the Baxter building in this game if you want to. It's where Fisk's tower used to be, and there's the Fantastic Four logo is being painted slowly or whatever, but you know, you can go to the Wakandan embassy and do the Black Panther salute as well, but it's never layered in a way to encourage you to explore, which I think is like just a big issue with like how the open world is presented. Like, you're right, there isn't enough stuff to do in here. Like, to me the side mission here that I was like, when I was playing through it the first time, the flame stuff, I was like, oh, this is kind of a little bit meh. I hope they have another big side mission in here. And that's the biggest side mission they have in the game, you know, and yeah. like that is... I mean, I enjoy all the Mysterium stuff. The finale to that is fantastic. You know, it is basically like Scarecrow's Nightmares from Batman Arkham, but, you know, Arkham Legacy continues. But yeah, I mean, like, I just... it's weird being, like, taking this time to be like, oh, you know, I'm so down on it in different ways, because I really did love it. I think it's just the fact that the improvements to me were so obvious that it feels bizarre that they weren't addressed, because everyone was asking for better open world crimes and stuff like this. And yeah. you know, the other weird thing as well, I don't know if you guys have completed the spider bots side mission yet.
Not all of them yet, but I'd just go for it.
So the end of that, it's a tie into Across the Spider-Verse, and you know that movie had a really troubled production as well. The character that you meet at the end of the Spider-Bot side quest was cut from the Across the Spider-Verse movie, apparently. So it's just like you basically meet a character that you have no knowledge of anyway. It just feels kind of like I think they should have used, you know, I don't know. I find it weird, because at this point in time with my superhero relationship, I'm so burnt out on crossovers and like, oh, we're gonna like build a universe and we've got to talk about things and like introduce these characters. I think the one part of the charm of the old Spider-Man games, especially the PS1 one and the Ultimate Spider-Man title, is that they felt a part of like a Marvel universe that felt believable. And it just gets to a point here where it's like, oh, okay, I guess I can hang out with Wraith and Miles Morales when I stop a crime, but why isn't, like, Daredevil hopping in the Hell's Kitchen or whatever?
To that end, like, my thing, like, that's kind of what I'm getting at with the feel of the 2018 one, where it felt like it had confinements to the story, whereas, like, in this one, we've got portals that can go immediately to Paris or go, like, immediately to, like, the North Pole or whatever it was. And it's, like, stuff like that, which, yeah, massively ties into that feeling of, like, you could say the 90s Spidey or, like, the overall amount of different stories that can be told across Spider-Man fiction, but it's not the type of feel that I thought we were getting from this new version kind of thing, or the Insomniac version, and then doing multiverse stuff and everything else. Like, that's almost immediately exhausting to me, because it's everything that I'm sick of in the wider MCU stuff. But Si, what do you think about all this stuff? Because me and you have talked a lot.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, well, when it comes to that, this is almost like we talked about this a week or two or whatever ago on the podcast, saying about, you know, when it comes to Spider-Man 3, as the fourth game now at this point, what are they going to do with the open world? Because they're going to have to mix it up a little bit. In this game, obviously, the way that they didn't do anything with the open world as it was, certainly it's going to, if they just do the same thing again, people are going to be kind of burnt out on it, I think. So there are, and I think my suggestion was that you're going to have to do some wacky sci-fi stuff with portals and upside down Manhattan or some kind of bizarre alternate reality stuff. And this game does trend towards that, as we talked about a little bit earlier on, with the portal, the Spider-Verse portal. But I don't think we're to go that route necessarily, but we're trending in a more breaking things open and alternate realities and all kinds of wacky stuff coming up next, which is interesting. And I hopefully they do make a big thing of it, because and hopefully people are calling out all these issues that you guys have pointed out when it comes to the random crimes and the complete reusage of that with barely anything added to it. Yeah, which is a real shame, and it just kind of makes New York feel flat because of it. When it comes to the story, though, I actually thought the pace was really, really good, and maybe that's just because, like, depends on how you play it, right? Because you were saying about 14, 16 hours. When I didn't look at the timer for this game, but when I got the 100% and turned it off, it said like 37.
Right.
I was like, okay, that's reasonable. So, but I stopped every now and then to go, I'm going to go do these for a bit now. So maybe the pace helped there. And something that I did like out about that was at a certain point in the story, Peter will react to the world around him slightly differently, like his dialogue slightly different, because if he's moody black suit Peter, like, he's more aggressive and stuff.
Shocker.
And the traversal, yeah, and the traversal music changes throughout, which I really like. It's a very small detail, but I like that changed throughout the story to kind of give you a tone and a mood of what's going on. So you'll hear that more and more if you stop and go do something else instead of just committing to the main path. So for me, the pacing wasn't a problem. And I don't I did see some like tweets and stuff that were like, including yours, Scott, that was like, you know, 19 minutes of Venom and stuff like that. It's like so maybe that prepared me for very little, but I didn't feel that way at all. I thought like the story is absolutely a highlight, and the fact that we spent so long on the lead up to release wondering who was going to turn out to be Venom, and they went with Harry, which is perfectly fine. But throughout the game, as you guys said, there's so many teasers that it could be XYZ. At one point I was sure it was going to be Kraven. I was he's dying.
He's
hunting symbiote Spider-Man. Yeah, he's a big
like
dude.
He needs
I was
it.
Like, that would be really interesting. What a cool direction. And they didn't do that, but I was like, do you know what, it's cool though, because he had a cool death.
They actually, like, that gameplay sequence I thought was genius, because Insomniac play around with perspective really well there. The bit before you take control of Venom is one of my favorite, like, gaming moments, full stop now, because the way the camera shifts perspective constantly, you think, okay, Harry's got the symbiote. Camera kind of comes towards where you are as Peter. It's like, oh, I'm getting ready to fight him now. And then it changes again. You're like, wait, is this going to continue to be a cutscene? And then it goes back to behind Venom, and then you can assume control of him. Like, I thought, like, regardless of how you think about how that gameplay sequence, like, pans out, I thought that was a very clever usage of perspective. And again, I really enjoy, like, they say, the twist and turns. I lost my, like, brain for anti-Venom. I should have seen that coming, because Mr. Negative is involved in anti-Venom's origins in the comics, and I should have thought, oh wait, of course that would make sense. But I like that idea, and I think in terms of long-term implications where the story goes next, I think it's interesting that it seems as if Peter will keep the symbiote, and he will be anti-Venom, which I think is a very cool idea for where you're going with the next game or whatever. And then, like, obviously into endgame conversations, you know, Peter taking a bit of a break, Miles becoming terrible suit Spider-Man as the long-term maybe solution while Peter relaxes for a little bit. And then the completely left-field inclusion of Cindy Moon, a.k.a. Silk, at the very end, which I guess maybe they're going to introduce as another Spider origin character, potentially.
Was it like Spider-Man 2, 2 Spideys, Spider-Man 3, 3 Spideys?
I'll take my half a point, because I said, didn't I, that it was, my prediction was that Peter was going to retire and it's going to be Miles and Gwen. And they didn't go Gwen, they went less obvious, so props to them for that. I'll take my half a point, thank you.
Yeah,
I mean, I think the third game looks to be is like you can have a fragile alliance between Doc Ock and Norman. I think maybe Doc is going to build Green Norman's. Well, he asks for the G-Stone at the end. I wonder if Doc Ock's going to help him build his own goblin armor or whatever, and you'll go from there. And that'll bring Peter back out of it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is that whole thing with the G-Serum, I don't know enough about Hobgoblin, but could we get a thing where you end up with Harry and Norman and Hobby and regular Gobby both coming out
potentially
together?
Potentially, that would be a cool way of changing it, because obviously you only ever have one at the time. Obviously, it was Norman to begin with, and then Norman dies, and then Harry assumes the role of Green Goblin because he's so grief-stricken that Spidey has, been involved in Norman's death or whatever. That would be a cool way of subverting it and making that you have two goblins to deal with. It's interesting. I think, I'm looking forward to where the story's going to go. Cindy Moon is such a wild inclusion for me, because I'm okay. But hopefully, like you say, we've talked so much about the flaws of this game. Hopefully the third game can go above and beyond and actually realize different aspects of that. And obviously, until then, we have Wolverine to come as well. So how's that going to play into it? Because that's confirmed to be set in the same universe and stuff.
Yeah, they left a lot of stuff hanging for me that I'm really, really interested in. There's several villain threads there we just talked about with the goblins and stuff. We have Chameleon as well being revealed, which I was kind of hoping for throughout the game. I was cool, because we're running low on some of the more iconic introductions for villains. We've done a lot of them at this point. And of course, the big one that sadly got spoiled for me was Carnage. Mm-hmm. Which of these are going to carry forward into the eventual Spider-Man 3? Are some of these going to be DLC chapters? Are we going to get DLC for this game? I expect we are. Which ones are going to land where?
We should talk about, speaking of villains, that made me think of everything with, obviously we haven't talked about Kraven yet, but the reality of wasting various main villains off screen, which I in the moment personally didn't have much of a problem with. I love the fact that they're letting Kraven kill main, love when main characters can die. I always love that stuff. And I love the scene where Kraven kills Scorpion. And then it's I guess I can see people the argument that when you then find out the scene of he's killed Shocker and Vulture and whatever off screen. In the moment, I was just cool, this dude's been busy, that's awesome, oh my god, they're all just taken care of. I kind of thought overall that Kraven, they didn't max out Kraven's appeal though. The reason he's fighting all that kind of stuff is tucked away behind the hunter blinds and finding the collectibles, and you get bits and pieces of it in the main story, but I think a lot of it hinges on the collectibles and just finding audio diaries kind of thing. So I thought it was a little bit weak overall. I didn't really think that, it's just me, I didn't think Kraven was that great overall. It's fine, big meathead dude is coming after you, but he's got a real reason to do it. It's fine. But I don't know where either of you came down on that. You and me were a Kraven fan.
I like Kraven to be a bit more of an anti-hero in my book. That's kind of where I come from in the 90s Spider-Man cartoon stuff, where it's the serum is driving him that way. I thought he was... The story went very, very dark with him. Obviously, we've gotten dark before. Literally, I think Marvel's Spider-Man has one of the most harrowing depictions of terrorism in video games. And then obviously, here you go really dark with all his stuff with his family. It's fine. It's not my Kraven. I think it's one of those where, I think it works the purposes of the story. It's kind of integrating aspects of Kraven's last hunt, only he has more of his faculties together, I guess. Depending on how you treat being a homicidal dude who wants to hunt the most dangerous game or whatever. It worked fine for me. I think the issue that you pick up on there is that so much the story here is told through, it's almost GTA 5 levels of obnoxiousness, where you're getting so many audio cues of oh, here's a phone call, here's another phone call, here's an audio diary. That for me did great after a while.
Totally.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll give a quick shout out, by the way, to VK's Games and Grub, longtime podcast fan, who did say that maybe there's a Kraven chapter of DLC and you're going to see a bit more of him killing off members of the Sinister Six, which would be cool and give him a bit more screen time, because he probably could do with a little bit more, because I thought he was really interesting. But they could have fleshed it out a little bit more. He could have had a little more screen time, considering he was kind of billed as big of the big bad, but then
because that whole jobs. The way the game kind of rolls out at the very beginning, you have the whole Sandman sequence, and then we almost start over again. You cut to Kraven, you show what he's up to, and then Kraven comes in, and I was like, oh man, that's cool. Standard Spidey stuff, way too much on his plate. He's just trying to go from A to B, but all these other elements keep getting in the way. And I really thought that Kraven and the Hunters, Kraven the Hunter and the Hunters, would feel a lot more omnipresent in the city. They are the only enemy type you fight for way too long, IMO, but I still thought that, you'd get jumped by Kraven as you're going between places, or you'd feel hunted. There was that whole opening bit about him finding the ultimate prey and the ultimate target and everything. I guess it's just for me, overall, I thought Kraven was pretty undercooked, even though there are things to point to.
Something really cool that you could have added to the open world, where you can accidentally just, wander into traps and stuff.
Yeah,
flying through and you've, you know, you...
This is what you want. You want kind of like a Man Bat moment from Arkham Knight, totally, don't you? Where something kind of comes at you from the open world. Way too much of the open world design here, and I think IGN mentioned it in their review, which is a really solid one, where they mentioned that so much of the open world design here feels like it's 12 years ago. Like you have to go to X thing, which triggers X event. There's no kind of, you know, spontaneity to the open world there, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, very checkboxy. We didn't talk about the actually one thing for the open world. I don't know if either of you tried this or if you did this back in 2004. But you can't go to the Statue of Liberty in this game. I remember in the 2004 one, you could actually swing on the helicopters and get all the way there. And child me was blown away that they let you do that in the original game. In this one, I should have mentioned this before when we were talking about what could they do for Spidey 3 and the parts of the environment they can open up, because I guess the Statue of Liberty is still something they can do. But there are parts of this where there's obviously the boundaries to the world itself, and you can see the boundary on the map. But if you try and swing to the Statue of Liberty or you try and swing into some of the train tunnels, it just gives you a big warning and says you are going outside the play area and just forces you back in again. And that's one of those things that only reinforces my general perception that the bits of this were cut, bits of this were... like, at some point, we need a hard line on this thing. Player cannot go here, you know, because we don't have a cute cutscene way of figuring this out kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know, like, the things like that, I just wanted to throw that in, is like, that was a bit like, oh, that's a bit disappointing when they've got so many, the ferries and the boats and the helicopters going back and forward to Statue of Liberty, but you can't jump on the thing.
I mean, I think I would very much enjoy the ability to hitch a ride on more of the trains and actually like go through the, because I mean, like, GTA 5 has it where you can go through the LA subway and stuff. I think it would make sense for Insomniac to do a similar thing here. Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to just different parts of the open world just feeling like a little bit kind of like boxy, like you just have like a cardboard playground to move around with. And again, like, it looks brilliant, it's great to swing around in. It's just the fact there isn't enough to interact with there. Like, before the game came out, I was really hoping that they'd give us some random nonsense to do with Spider-Man. Like, we all make fun of it, but yeah, exactly, we all make fun of that.
The music was great.
Like, I would love to be able to just like, oh, Peter needs to make some money, here's a pizza delivery that you can go make right now, or like, oh, he needs to do this, you can like, I think it just needs more nonsense. And the thing that I think about like within Sonic Spider-Man, as much as I enjoy all the emotional depth and whatever, there needs to be a degree of levity to, you know, Spider-Man has gone from fighting the Sinister Six in the previous game, taking down Wilson Fisk, to now he's doing the alien invasion stuff. We need to see a little bit more friendly neighborhood stuff, and I know they do that with Miles' side missions, with like with the friendly neighborhood app stuff and like the stuff with Howard as well, which is brilliant and completely crushed me. but they needed more of like, that's still emotionally, that's a lot of that stuff still really emotionally charged.
Yes.
And I feel like you just needed a little bit of fun to go along with that.
Yeah. There's also the thing that like when you're taking like that Howard mission's great. There's another one with like an older man who's wandered away from their carer, and you could like keep him company for a bit. And it's like those are really very nicely written, emotionally resonant beats of that game. Like that Howard mission, like the bit of music that plays, and you get to explore the city with the pigeons and everything. That feels almost crafted from an in motion Spider-Man game that we didn't get a full version of, compared to how sort of arbitrary and threadbare things like the open world combat scenarios are. Like in the first two games, you had all these different areas to clean out. In this, you get the hunter blinds, which is one wave of enemy per area, and then you go to what is like four warehouses in total, and they're all one hit and done, and that's kind of it.
The hunter blinds, the warehouses, the stupid the one that leads you to Chameleon, the scout drone ones where you got to follow their path and do that repeat. It's a lot of rinse and repeat stuff.
We didn't talk about the costumes. I didn't realize the time has flown. We've done over a half an hour. But thoughts on the costume stuff? Because you mentioned there's a lot of stuff that they didn't bring forward. But I thought this going in that a lot of the new suits looked terrible, and nothing changed me on that. I haven't actually been unlocking them because I'm like, I'm not wasting my tokens on this.
My big issue with the costumes in this game, and it kind of goes back to a trend with superhero designs and video games in general, is that a lot of them just feel really overly designed. There's a real big emphasis on how many lines, how many effects, how many things can we put on the suit. And it kind of comes back to, I don't know if you guys are the same, but like when you were kids, when you wanted to get like a Batman or Spider-Man action figure, you never wanted like freeze action Batman or jungle,
oh, the weird like knockoff ones,
Spider-Man. No, those were legit ones. You would have like the action
Batman
figure,
Batman in
like
the orange thing, yeah, with the parachute. Yeah.
It's like Spider-Man with a car.
I don't want solar flare Batman. I just want Batman. Yeah. Or I just want Spider-Man. And I think the issue that a lot of these, like when they're commissioning these artists to design these suits, they're thinking too heavily about that kind of, and a lot of them do look really good. It's a shame to me because there are so many great suits that they didn't bring across in the previous game too. Yeah, I don't know, like there's some stuff that I feel like is missing personally, and it's even more annoying given that they make slight appearances in the spider bots where you can see, oh, we've got these suits here. So I don't know, like it's a weird array of stuff. Like, I just wish that there was more to it. And again, like, it emblematic to me is Miles' unlockable, well, the suit that he gets at the end, which is just a complete abomination. Like, Sarah Pichelli's design from Ultimate Spider-Man in 2010, or 2011 rather, it's aged perfectly. There's a reason why it's the gold standard for Miles Morales' suits. I don't understand why Marvel in general keeps trying to, you know, divest from that. I don't know, like, it frustrated me how much in here just did not look, like, it didn't look great.
Yeah, the things like that, it's, because you get various suits for completing the open world side missions, but when the general feel is like, well, it's probably not going to be worth it, it doesn't massively encourage you to seek those things down when the standard ones you're getting are so randomly thrown together anyway. There is a Wolverine suit in here, which I thought was interesting in regards to, obviously, Insomniac doing that next anyway. But, Cy, thoughts on the visuals?
Yeah, largely agreed, unfortunately. The suits kind of just fall into two categories of, as you say, over-designed, lots of metal pieces, futuristic kind of in whatever, and then just variations on the same thing. Like, there's like three or four black suit Spider-Mans or whatever, and it's like, yeah, okay, I guess they are slightly different, but like, where's the interesting stuff? And there's so much, you know, Dan Durkin wanted me to shout out, you know, so many cut from the original game, and we talked about it on Slack last week. It's just a shame, because there, some of them are represented in the spider bots, which feels like a bit of a tease, really. And you're like, oh yeah, I remember that cool look. Shame I can't wear it now. Instead, I've got to wear XYZ.
I was absolutely desperate for them to include Mark Bagley's sensational Spider-Man costume, which is the Spider-Man suit that Ben Reilly gets when he replaced Peter Parker as Spider-Man in the 90s. Yeah. And it's mentioned in the spider bot thing, but yet you can't actually have it here. And I'm just like, it's there. Just need to make it's not a little robot. And like, I don't know, like, it's such a weird feeling right now, because I loved my time with this game. Like, I really did. Like, there was a reason I gave it 4.5 stars. I think it's one of those things where, for me, when the experience stands out as being so great, that the fact that when the flaws are this obvious, it's so easy to dwell on them, because they are really obvious things that are weird they weren't addressed. But I guess my thing is, like, does that make it a bad sequel or like a bad game? And I don't know if it makes it a bad game, because I still think I had as great a time with it as the original.
No, for sure.
I think it's just a frustrating lack of, like, it baffles me slightly that those things weren't, like, it's one of my biggest pet peeves when sequels pointlessly remove stuff from, I think we've gone, like, several lists on this phenomenon where it's literally, like, a case of, like, you had a thing in this previous game, and they remove, like, you can't even listen back to podcasts. Like, that's bizarre. They've not even added New Game Plus yet. I think that's coming in, like,
no, apparently it's coming in the future.
It's and it goes back to what you're saying, Scott, like, the idea that maybe they had to, like, get this out this year, and there were certain things they just didn't add in time, which, for me, if you're Sony, I understand, because you haven't had that many PS5 exclusives this year, and you need something to close out the holidays, especially with that Across the Spider-Verse marketing crossover or whatever. But to me, it makes more sense to give your best, or one of your best developers, more time to make sure they get everything in there. But, like, the stuff we're talking about is small. Like, it's not, like, big issues. It's, like, little things that I really feel have been completely weirdly ignored.
Yeah. Simon, what do you think of that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to theorize, but unfortunately, it does make me slightly worried, considering that the next game that they're going to build has to be completely different with Wolverine. Like, these small issues that we, like, could have been tightened up, you kind of done a bit here more, might become bigger issues if they're like, this is the deadline. And it's like, well, we are so much further away from that deadline because we don't have anything to build, where we have less to build from, because it's going to be its own thing entirely.
That's the thing, like, the amount that they've got in the works, the amount of plates they're spinning.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
You can go the last 5 years, like all the games I reeled off before, but add planning and executing on assumedly an early version of Wolverine across that time period as well. It's just insane. For me, it firmly sits in that category of another boring Sony sequel, and I have to imagine from the top down, because for me, it's right alongside God of War Ragnarok and Horizon Forbidden West. Like, the presentation is incredible, there's one element they do very well, but there's so much carryover and so much hyperextension of what went before, and the best elements, at least to me, for Horizon and God of War were in thematics and were in character depictions and were in
the everything other than the gameplay. Thankfully, Spidey 2 has incredible traversal, but there's, for me, there's something happening over at Sony. I think, I mean, right now we've got the head of Sony stepping down next year. Connie Booth's apparently been fired, according to various rumors behind the scenes, as a veteran producer, and it seems like they're having a bit of a shake-up in regards to what they thought was going to be their future, live service stuff, get rid of the single-player stuff, and that seems to be shaking out differently anyway. But I look at something like this, and I just have to imagine the realities of what led to it, and that would mean cutting corners, changing things, reducing scope, get it over the finish line, get it done. Like Ewan said, have a good first party game available this year so you have something ready to go into Christmas. And things like that Spider-Verse thing only illuminate the fact that they maybe did have a way for this to line up over time, but the way that Spider-Verse was handled apparently was a bit of a mess as well. So like, I don't know, there's to me, you can feel it. I could feel it when I was playing through it, where it just felt a bit undercooked, a bit too reused, a little bit too much, like I said, boring Sony sequel. And I think they've done three in a row now, for me anyway. And it's just one of those things that stands out, where I thought it would be so much more than this. But those would be my closing thoughts. We should end on this, maybe more positive. Ewan, closing, potentially positive thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it. Like, again, like, we spent a lot of time talking about the negatives here. I think it's because it's like, again, like, the standard that Insomniac has set has been so high that when things fall short, it's easy to dwell on those aspects. But overall, like, I loved this game. It's like, it may not be as quote-unquote complete as its predecessor, but I think in terms of what it achieves, I very much enjoy it. I think the story for me hit really hard, you know, diving into the idea of, like, you know, quarter-life crises and, like, reckoning with the loss of loved ones and, you know, maturing and how scary it is to enter a new chapter in your life and stuff like that. Again, like, all these elements are, like, I'm at the right age to kind of, for it to hit really hard. And I love the presentation. I love the relationship that Peter and Harry had. There's like a whole big story analysis that we could do here, I think, because I think, you know, this for me is one of the best depictions of Spider-Man. And again, it stands in stark contrast to where the character is in the comics, where he has not been allowed to grow for what feels like 20 years now. Whereas, you know, you look at something like this or Spider-Verse, where it's like, oh no, we're going to show Peter Parker at different stages in his life. This, to me, is where the heart and soul of the original Marvel comics done by Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, that's where it all lies. And, that's again, like, I loved it. And I think, like, the finale and everything. Yeah, no, I loved it. I just wish just a little things.
We should definitely do, we'll do a proper story-focused breakdown, because, like, in terms of actual specific plot beats, we didn't focus on too many of them. Just because there is diverging dividing line emerging around the game the more time there's been since launch, like the amount of general conversations that there are around the stuff it does phenomenally, and then, like you just said, Ewan, being like, but I wish this was good too. And I think, like, maybe get that out the way and then we could talk about the story stuff. But Cy, closing thoughts?
Yeah, there was just so much expectation, which is what makes it kind of sting when there's just a few too many little blemishes in various aspects of the game. And most of it actually comes down to gameplay, I guess, because, as I say, I think the story was phenomenal. It's a worthy sequel in that regard, absolutely, like the way that it carried everything over. Storytelling wise, I think I prefer it over the first game in that instance. Nice. But when it comes to, if someone would ask me what is the better game of the two, I think, yeah, you said complete. I think the first game has to win out because it does feel like a more rounded out experience. And this is just, there's just a few too many holes that are easy to poke through, which is a real shame, because it's a really, like, if I had to put a number on it, it's a solid, like, 8.5 out of 10, or maybe something. Yeah. Right. It's
which
really
is still
good,
great.
And I have no issue with iterative sequels whatsoever, but this one is a little bit on the flaky side, as we said, in terms of the stuff that they really should have improved over time or added to or just changed in some way. Why is the crime stuff the same? Like, yeah, I hadn't even thought about it, but I didn't bother with it at all, because it's like, oh, I've done all this already in the last two games. It's a shame.
Even stuff like
when
like a car gets stolen, it's like they remove one of the button prompts from that, which is fine, but
it's a shame, because otherwise it is a really good game that is just being let down by these little holes that you can poke through it, unfortunately.
Yeah, a fascinating release, though.
It's not what you want in a game, like, in a year like this.
No, I think it's like, this year is ridiculous. Like, I still want to attempt. I don't know how I'm going to do this. I haven't asked any of you yet how to do this. But I was like, do we attempt to rank everything that released this year? And do one of, you know, those big... You know those big, like, tier ranking graphics where it's all the multicolored thing?
My
we just
God,
put,
I love it. Yeah,
put everything
it.
Into
Gong
that.
And Kong. So, Gong and Gollum Skull Island.
Yes.
Break a pool cue in half, toss it to them, see who fights the last place.
Red pool immediately in the middle. But yeah, for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Goodbye.
And joined by Cy White.
Ta-ra.
A massive thank you to all of you for listening, and we'll catch you very soon. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.